Last time I saw you, you were on my telly. I see on telly now that I'm on. See you in real life.
What was I doing on your telly? I'm hoping nothing untoward.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Listening to Sappening Podcast.
Sappening!
Sappening! You are listening to episode 281 of Sappening Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and this isn't the type of podcast that our guests stumble through questions that you could never answer. It's more of a grand unification to be human.
Jesus Christ, that was awful. Yes, this week is fight star drummer, the beautiful human that is Omar Abidi.
Yes, and out of all the podcasts we've done, there is constantly one reunion we have been begging and trying to make happen, especially whenever we've had the ear of a drunk Charlie Simpson. But fight star are back last month. The band came off hiatus for the first time in 9 years to play for one night only at Wembley Arena. I was there. It was just a huge celebration feel throughout the night for not only this band, but the music. And certain time in people's lives, just seeing so many old friends. And it's like this magical nostalgia shindigs bring people together at an awesome time. But one of my personal highlights was witnessing the constant smile on drummer Omar behind the kit. And with this being a band that means a lot to us personally and people listening, we had to get him on to give an insight onto everything that went down that night, the band's 20th anniversary, and just mad stories from his life.
Yes, they were, and they're awesome. Crazy stories. Yes, this was a very engaging, funny, interesting and very informative chat with Omar. It was brilliant. I really, really, really enjoyed this. So much so, I'd love to do a part two because, yeah, there's so much more I'd like to ask him about stuff and his time outside of Fight Star and acting and, yeah, stuff like that as well. But, yeah, this was a super, super good chat. If you like Fight Star, this has got some fantastic inside knowledge and wild stories from their career and everything that's happened to him.
Yeah, well, he's the only one of the four that really hasn't been prominent in music during the band's kind of different hiatuses. So that's why we really wanted to get him on and his insight into everything. And he talks so freely about the backstage nuances and how that show came together from the set list and the status of their hiatus and the future to just wild moments throughout the band's legacy. A raw fish, which is questionable, and yep, a cheeky favor that Ed Sheeran tried to ask.
Yes, very clever. Yeah, you need to hear that story just to work out what I think I've worked out. Which is how the elite go to see their favourite bands and then get song requests. Very clever. Do you know what? I might be wrong. Ed, the only way we can find out is if Ed Sheeran gets in touch with us and lets us know at Sappening Pod on Instagram, the app formerly known as X. Oh, no, the app formerly known as Twitter. And you can fucking go to TikTok, but Jesus Christ, I haven't looked at it for months, so fuck knows what's happening.
Yeah.
We could be the biggest podcast on TikTok for all I know now. We're not, obviously.
We're not,
but
we haven't posted in fucking forever, but I'd rather go and check out our Patreon page at patreon.com /satmin to keep this thing running each and every week and get involved with a wonderful community of people. With this gig in particular, I met up with a bunch of our patrons at Box Park for food and drinks beforehand. We had a lovely little time. And some of them even made Taylor Swift-inspired Fight Star friendship bracelets. That was a very, very nice touch. And on the other side of our Patreon community, one of them was trying to teach their son a Blackout song on guitar. And then you went and found the actual tablature chords and all that from Bob.
If I say found, you mean I text Bob going, oh, Bob, how'd you play Nice Things? And what tune is it in? And then he replied, I was like, because I got no idea, because I've been asked it. So yeah, he sent over what he plays. And then he replied going, I have no idea what Matthew plays, which makes sense.
Hey, for all that great insight and more, patreon.com/sapmin.
Yes.
But without any further ado, let's get straight into this wonderful conversation with Omar on episode 281 of Sapnin Podcast.
Yes, got a lot of love for Omar. It was fucking great to see him again. Also, shout out to the other boys in Fight Star, because thank you very much for taking the Blackout on our first big tour. You guys were it, and we had a fucking ball and a blast, even when Bob reversed our van into Orson Size's van, and it cost us a couple of grand, I believe.
Ooh.
But I love Omar. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Girl.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sapnin! Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Yes!
Hey! This week's guest, actor, musician, engineer, a man of many, many talents. I even accidentally looked at his LinkedIn earlier as well. Boy, tour manager, bloody hell, he's done it all.
Yeah, master of none, they say.
No, not at all, not at all. Yes, we are currently joined by the fantastic Omar Abidi of Fight Star. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah. Absolutely perfectly,
yes!
Mate. Absolutely
yes!
Perfect, mate. Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me.
No, pleasure.
It's good to see your face again, man. It's been a while, isn't it?
It has been a while.
Yeah.
You took the Blackout on our first ever big tour.
Yeah.
Remember when bands are starting out and then they do like a big tour with a big band?
That
was our first ever one was with you.
Yeah, so I remember. I've got fond memories of that tour, man. I mean, what year was that? Like 2007 or 2006?
Six, I think. It was, yeah, because it was, yeah, we opened, Ocean Size played with the drummer who could do both sides.
The open size, as I called
them. Yeah. Oh, nice, yeah. And then you guys absolutely smashed it. Yeah, that was our first big tour. We were so excited. We were literally babies. And yeah, you took us out and we had a great time.
Seem to remember like there was some weird moment in Newport when we played in Newport. And I think you saved one of my toms from being nicked outside the front of the venue.
Newport.
Sounds like Newport.
Yeah, good times, man. A lot's happened since then, right? You guys have done, a lot. You've been going for flat out, mate. Good stuff.
Yes.
Well, there's definitely a lot we want to talk to you about as well. But how are you doing at the moment, man? How is your day to day? How's this life treating you?
Things are good. I'm actually in the midst of getting ready to leave the country, kind of, and move to Portugal. So, yeah, I'm half Portuguese and I've been kind of thinking about the move since sort of 2015, 2016, since this town we call London started to dissolve. And I think, after COVID, which was a whole mad story in itself, I came back and I kind of realized that I had very little that I really felt attached to in London. So right now I've managed to get all of the documents and all that crap sorted. And yeah, about 7 days I'm driving over with sort of my key kit and then I'll be back and forth a bit, but I'm off, man.
Wow.
That's mad.
Fair play, yeah.
I know. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I've been looking forward to it for a while though.
That must feel like a kind of fresh start for you in many different ways as well. And just kind of getting to a place where you obviously are familiar with, but not as much as probably you'd like to.
Yes. I mean, I've got really fond memories of Portugal through my childhood, from like summer holidays and stuff like that. So I was fortunate enough to sort of learn the basic language when I was younger. And then I've just been really reconnecting with it over the sort of last 10 years. And every time I'm there, I feel just a bit more calm, a bit more zen, a bit more like at peace with myself. So I think, I hit 40 last year and it was kind of a moment for me where I was like, what do I really want? You know, London's great, but it's great for an old version of me, and the new version of me isn't craving any of this stuff anymore. So
yes,
I want, forests and lakes and waterfalls and majestic moments.
Oh, you could have come to Wales. You could have moved to Merthyr. Oh, no, don't do that.
I didn't say rain.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. There's a lot of that. Like, it has been non-stop. Non-stop.
Yeah, especially this last winter, man. Bloody hell.
Oh, God. But while we're talking about positive things of London, I mean, we should start with the fact that we are currently 3 weeks removed from Fight Stars one night only return at Wembley Arena. Now that you've had a little bit of time for it to sink in, how was that night for you and just the general experience of being back with the guys, rehearsing, doing photo shoots, and then going back out in front of your biggest crowd ever?
Yeah, man. It's been a lot. It's been a lot, and it's been a real journey. And it was, for me personally, I hadn't played a live show in 9 years.
Wow.
I hadn't been really in front of a crowd of any sort for 9 years. And there was a physical element to like getting back on track. And then there was the bigger hurdle, which was the mental element of getting back on track. And first of all, the gig was kind of born out of this weird moment we had last year in March, where it was Al's birthday. It was his 40th. And we hadn't all been in the room together for probably about 6 years.
Wow.
I know. And, And you know, it's those weird moments when you Sean, you know this. You know when you've been in a band for so long and then you don't see some of them for a while. There's like weird things that each of you sort of maybe have in your mind about, like, is it going to be like it was? Yeah. Is there any of the weird, like, little arguments we used to have that are going to still be lingering around? Or is it just going to feel like a bunch of brothers, like, feeling awesome and coming together again? And the vibe was just like four people who literally saw each other yesterday. And, you know, it was such good vibes. And we thought sort of nothing of it. It was just beautiful, really good to catch up with the guys. And then it was literally, I think a few days later, I was flying to Thailand for sort of my sort of yearly get the fuck out of London vibe. And sorry, am I allowed to swear?
Oh, yes. Swear as much as you want. Yeah, good. Good,
right. Fucking great. So, and I was fast asleep. Obviously, the time difference of London. And Charlie's calling me. Now, Charlie never fucking calls, right? Charlie will message, blah, 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 but he never calls. And I'm just like, part of me is like, what the fuck? Why is he? So I didn't answer. I was like, it's fucking 3 a.m. Like, I'm definitely asleep. So, and he just won't stop calling. So I answered and he's like, Obes, what are you up to? Da-da-da. I'm like, I'm asleep, mate. It's 3 a.m. Like, do you fancy playing Wembley? And I'm just like, what? What? And he's like, Wembley, we've been offered Wembley. And I'm just like, what? I can't stop saying what, because I'm half asleep. So part of this is like, it's almost like a weird dream.
Yeah.
And I was just like, mate, what the fuck? Like, amazing. All right. I'll tell you what, it's really late. Let me call you in the morning. So I literally put the phone down and I was so half asleep. I fell straight back to sleep. And I woke up the next morning and it didn't even hit me straight away. I remember getting up, going and making coffee. And it was as I was putting some sugar in my coffee, I was stirring the cup and I was like, what? Did he? I picked up my phone straight away and I called him back and I was like, you called me last night, right? He's like, yeah, Wembley, mate. And I was like, I fucking thought that was a dream. Whoa. And then again, I was just like, are you sure? Like, has someone actually run the numbers on this? And he's like, I asked the same question, mate. I'm just as surprised as you are, but the offer's come in. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it, man.
Yes. So,
I mean, at that point, we weren't really thinking of the logistics and the actual difficulty
of
putting on a one-off when we hadn't played together in 9 years or 8 years at that point, 9 years when we played the show. So, yeah, I mean, getting back into the room and rehearsing with them was just, it was wonderful. But prior to that, that's where there was the struggle point for me. I'd been in a position where actually not only had I not played a live gig with anyone, let alone the boys, for 9 years, but I hadn't actually been behind a drum kit since about 2018.
Wow.
And I was just like, part of me was like, yeah. And then another part of me was like, are you sure you can still do it? And
the gremlin.
Like, it was like a Jekyll and Hyde thing in my mind, you know, and I had to kind of really, put myself in a certain headspace and I had to knuckle down in a way I've never knuckled down really before. And before going in the room with the boys and just get my legs moving again, get my arms moving again, like remembering all the songs, playing along with the record, you know, for like about 2 weeks nonstop every day. And that was great, actually, because I've never actually done that level of sort of personal rehearsal before meeting up with the boys. So actually what it meant is when we got in the room together up at the Bloom Room, which is, you know, where everything actually originated from back in the day, which is Al's parents' old barn.
Wow.
We actually hit the ground running, which was really nice. And I remember sort of looking around the room because everyone had been on that same flex of like, I've got no idea how to play some of these songs anymore, like rehearsing like a motherfucker at home before we met. So then we like came together and then we had the click tracks and it was like, I remember the first couple of days we were looking around going, it's not that bad, boys.
that's
all right, isn't it? Like that's pretty good for the first couple of days of rehearsal. And then there were some ups and downs, and I pushed myself a bit too hard a few days and tired myself out and then got frustrated with myself and then had to have a good talking with myself sort of 2 days before the show when I was finding a couple of things quite challenging. And it was just more of a getting out of a certain headspace. But the day of the show, I mean, it really all just came together, and we all really made sure the backstage was super quiet and zen. I took, the hour before getting up to rehearsal, getting up to the stage, sorry. I just took that to literally basically meditate for an hour and run the set in my head, basically from start to finish. And it paid off. I mean, it was rather special. It was slightly an out of body experience in some ways. There's, I don't remember most of it. and I remember the feeling, and I remember now from photographs, but it was really, it was something rather special and something I will take with me to my grave.
Yeah.
I think rather's kind of underplaying it, to be honest. I think it was very, very special. Not like, I'm not speaking on your behalf, but I'm on behalf of everybody who was there and everybody who's liked Fight Star. It was very, very special.
Thank you, man. Yeah, we've had amazing feedback from it, and I think it did. It struck a chord with people. We've had people who are just, on repeat, like, take me back to that gig, take me back, And some of the videos that I've seen from inside the crowd, like inside the pit and stuff, almost brought a tear to my eye, man. Like, some of the energy levels is... we're all so grateful because, as Al said on stage, they are Fight Star as much as we are, like without them, we're nothing, absolutely nothing. We're just four blokes trying to do something. they are what make us actually do it,
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I was down the front for that gig and just the whole night felt like a giant celebration, and not just for the band, but kind of the music and the fans and the kind of connection and time you've all spent together. And I think it's just goes without saying, seeing how far some people had traveled for this show alone. Like, it wasn't just people from London, the outskirts of the UK. Like, people had flown over from America, different parts of Europe. So that must
Japan,
be mind-blowing.
Indonesia, South Africa. There was one person from Australia.
Wales.
Wales. I mean, it takes about the same time to get from Wales to Australia, doesn't it, these days?
Pretty much.
I mean, it was so humbling, so humbling. And to know that they went away, especially those people who, I mean, they've probably spent thousands coming to the show, right?
Yeah.
To know that they walked away and went, that was worth all the hours, all the money.
It's the best feeling.
That's like the most satiating feeling you can ever have, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, yeah, the blackout have just come back from doing, we had like an eight-year break.
Mm.
And it was meant to be a break. It was meant to be done. But then we just thought, look, none of us are getting any younger.
And you're not so much cunts anymore, so let's get on with it.
Yeah, I think the other five went, oh, Sean's mellowed, we can be in a band with him again.
Oh, nice, there you go.
And yeah, just those moments where I went out on stage every night, and at first I was just doing it for me, just for my happiness, because I went into like depression and stuff after the band ended, and it was like an awful time. So this was just everything I'd wanted. But then as soon as I got out there, as soon as I got on stage and saw it meant as much to some other people in the crowd, it blew my mind. And I was just, I cannot be grateful enough for that.
Yeah.
And the fact people give a shit about my silly, silly band. It's mental.
I totally empathize with you on the, because the when the band stops, it's at first there's a sense of relief, right? And then after a little while, there's a sense of loss. And then there's a little bit of mourning after that loss. And it's, because I went through it in end of 2010 into 2011. And at that point, I was actually quite, you know, I was really searching for who I was again.
Exactly.
Because you've based your whole persona on something that is finite, like, and that could have been the end. Even, you know, as you said, for you guys, you said it was the end at that point. For us, we said we were only going on a sort of a year or two hiatus, and that just got stretched and stretched and stretched. And I think it got stretched because we all started getting comfortable with the loss. So it's like almost bringing it back and then losing it again is almost more painful than just letting it be. And for me, it was very challenging because, you know, I tried to stay in the industry and start working behind the scenes. I continued with a lot of the tour management work, but I started doing artist management, which for me is just, I don't enjoy it. That's the truth of it. I think artist managers have to have a cold heart deep down or be able to shut out a lot. And that for me, unfortunately, I'm a bit too much of a sensitive person to really be a great manager who needs to be a bit of a cunt, really. So yeah, it was, for me, it was that, I mean, for you, 8 years, for us, we, you know, we stopped for four, then we did the reunion, in 2014, 15 and Behind the Devil's Back, which, you know, for us, that was probably, or for, definitely for me, I know probably Charlie would say the same thing, is, you know, now our favorite album because of where it came from. It came from a place of doing it for ourselves. We didn't give a fuck at all whether we love the fans, but if we're being deadly honest, it was a record for ourselves. And that's why the fans ended up really loving it, you know, because we didn't give a fuck at all. It wasn't about getting in any chart positions. It wasn't about impressing anyone apart from our own ears and going, fuck yeah, that's a record I wanted to make, you know. To then fast forward another 8-9 years to then play Wembley, we could have never dreamed of that. Could have never dreamed of it.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mental.
Wait, you said there, every time Fight Stars stopped, it's always being on like a hiatus kind of mood. But obviously, yeah, you know, the rest of the guys have got so many different projects and schedules and all your lives combined. It's hard to get everyone back on the same format and on the same time scale. But like, from behind the scenes, when it has been a few years, has it always been in the back of your mind like, oh no, we will get back to this eventually? Or does it start to get like, I don't know if we will, and we've just set this hiatus to keep the fans happy? Like,
no, I think we've always known that there's something about this band that it will go on until one of us pops our clogs. And that's probably where it will end. I don't think anyone would ever dream of doing it with a new member when we're like fucking 60 or something. Like that will be the end of Fight Star, is when one of us no longer around. And I think this has reinstalled that as well. I think, you know, there's very much been, after this show, it's been like Fight Star forever. And we're good with that. But it's just unfortunately that life for us and how separated we are physically. And, you know, the other three guys have got two kids each, wives, they've got lives, they've got, you know, Charlie's still very busy with his other musical commitments as well. So it's like trying to make it work without it feeling forced is where the magic is for us. You know, we've learned that when we try and push things and force things, that's where things don't really pan out the way we want them to. So we've kind of given Fight Star this ability to just happen naturally when it's supposed to. And we're just really fortunate to have a fan base that is there. And that's what, you know, is, as I said before, it's extremely humbling to come back and they're there waiting and wanting new material or new shows. So yeah, it's not going away. We just can't make any promises yet. That's all.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's nice to have as well, that, you know, if something comes up and you guys are all free and you want to do it, you can. There's no kind of bigger commitment of like, oh, we need to reform or anything. It's just like, if that makes sense, we can do it.
Yeah, we're still together. We're still friends. We always will be. We still, you know, we can still play the material, thankfully. And yeah, when things align, we'll be there. There won't be any doubt of that.
I imagine in between Wembley and, you know, 2015, when you did your last ring of shows, you guys must have had offers, though, for like random things or festival appearances or something like that.
Yeah, we did, actually. We had a couple of things over the years, a number of things, really. And actually, the last one that I remember was... it was quite a big festival offer. I can't name names, but it was quite a big festival stage offer for 2020. And we got this offer in late 2019. And actually, it was Al that basically, and we've always given the right of veto to any member of the band without hassle, without guilt tripping. Like, we understand if one person is like, dudes, this doesn't work for me, the three of us aren't going to pressure the other, that member to do it. We've always said that, right?
Very cool.
So nice. Al was like, guys, this is not going to work for me this year. And there was a moment of, oh, come on, man. Like, what the fuck? Like, this is really good money, really good stage, like, be a wicked thing. But then actually we all went back to that veto, right? And we went, you know what? Absolutely fair. You know, I'm a bit sad to not do it, but it's all good, you know? And turns out that would have been a fucking nightmare anyway because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
Because the thing was like do a festival and then probably attach a tour to it. So we would have been selling our own tickets and that would have been bad. So it was, as I said, everything with this band tends to happen when it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And we know now not to fuck with that. You know?
Nice.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I'd hate to be Fight Stars booking agent just going, boys, what's the vibes like this weekend? What are we thinking?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel bad for that guy. He doesn't age either, that guy. He doesn't age. He was at the show and he looks exactly the same as he did 10 years ago. So.
Well, but talking about Wembley, and as I said, it felt like a giant celebration, but I wanted to talk about the set list a little bit because...
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it was full of just deep cuts and songs that fans want to hear who have been with you guys since day one. They like the deep cuts, the album tracks. You even played a B-side at one point, which Charlie was like, I don't think anyone's going to know this. Started playing it and the whole place went crazy. Like,
yeah.
But what I found really interesting, and I didn't notice until afterwards, is the amount of like big radio singles and hits that maybe in like a fan who's not too much into the band, you didn't play at all. There's loads like English Way, Mercury, Summer, We Apologize for Nothing, Floods. Yeah. I could go on for ages. Was that a real move on purpose to be like, no, let's play the songs that people want to hear? That has been stuck with us, or like, what was the thought process behind that?
Again, I think it's from our learnings of Behind the Devil's Back. It was that realization that if we play what we want to play, what we enjoy most, not only is it going to come off best live, but the fans will get it. They'll get that journey through. You know, because it goes all the way back to the EP, right through to Behind the Devil's Back, and even, you know, Hurt as a cover, which is like one of the first cover tracks we ever did back in the day. And yes, there were moments where we were in rehearsals and we, you know, we were like, shit, like, there's already people posting, like, can't wait to hear Mercury Summer and can't wait to hear English Way. And, you know, we even joked about like playing like the first couple of notes of a track just for going into something else. And like, but we were just being teasing, really. But I think we did have a sense of shit, this could be taken badly. But then the more we fine tuned the set, the more we realized that this sound right here, this is Fight Star, really. Because, you know, as if we're being like, you know, deadly honest and we still have a fondness for Mercury Summer, English Way, some of those, you know, more radio-friendly tracks. But they were made at a time by us where we were trying to engineer certain ways of our sound to do certain things. And when we look back on them, there is definitely an element of it's not pure Fight Star in some ways. It still is. And I don't want to negate the way people feel about those tracks because, you know, like We Apologize for Nothing is still one of my favorite Fight Star tracks of all times. And I still, that's my favorite video, actually, because it's just a real video of us having fun and showing who we really are. But it was difficult because we it was a risk that we took. But what we found afterwards is the chatter about us not playing them was minimal. There was maybe a few people like, I can't believe they didn't play this and they didn't play that. But man, it was fucking awesome anyway. Whoa, like the show worked as a coherent show. And, you know, we had to chuck in Amethyst Acoustic because that's, you know, it's definitely one for the old school fans. So yeah, it was definitely something aimed towards the true hardcore Fight Star fans rather than people who might know a few of our singles.
Yeah, as you said, I didn't notice it until afterwards. There wasn't a feeling of like, we haven't played this yet. It was just that
nothing was missing.
Yeah, that's mad. But yeah, I just thought it was a huge power move because afterwards I thought the amount of bands who would love to have a back catalogue with radio hits like that, and then you play Wembley and go, nah, you're right. We'll just play the B-sides instead. I mean, fair play to you. Fair play.
Yeah. It was a celebration. So we just wanted to do something that felt really authentic. And those were the songs that felt the most authentic and the most that we were the most proud of to basically say, hey, this is what we are, you know.
I saw a video you posted a couple of days afterwards where you said during the first song, Paint Your Target, you broke one of your drumsticks really on the
third hit of the song, which is what? It's a brand new drumstick and it just crumbled in my hand on the third hit.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you said that back in the day that really would have angered you, really got to you and kind of maybe messed up your whole performance, but you kind of laughed it away and this time around. It was that mindset of just kind of being more in the moment and appreciating where you are and think, you know, this is literally one night only. I just want to enjoy it.
Absolutely. I think I'm a very different person to who I used to be. My ways of approaching myself are very much more reflective. And as I said before, there was a lot of time I had to spend to just really get myself in the right headspace. And as I said as well, like before the show, I had to take that hour before I went on to really meditate and be alone. And in that, you know, something I've learned over the years is the magic really comes from being in the joy of the moment. No matter what happens, if you find the joy, everything else will come through as long as you put in the work before. You know, finding the joy without having done any of the homework, good luck. But if you've done the homework, that belief in yourself and being in that moment of joy is what is going to carry you through. So when I got up onto the riser and the lights came up on the crowd and I saw everyone, that began the continuation of those moments of joy through the whole set. So when I broke that stick, it was just like, that's funny. Next stick, on we go. And years ago, that would have really, you know, fucked with me. Like, I would have been thinking about it and I would have messed up the rest of the song because I'd be like, why did it break? Like, what's going on? Like, is this a sign to think, you know, of things to come? Is this doomed gig? Like, just in my head. And I just had to maintain that focus of joy, looking out, seeing all those beautiful faces, hearing all those beautiful voices singing back at me. Like, how can you focus on the inside when outside there's all of that, you know? So I just took it in, man, and just did what I could do.
And what a job you did. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
Well, when you were there practicing and reliving these songs and listening back to the albums and everything, was there any memories in particular that came to you or just really reunited you to a place you go, oh my God, I can't believe we got to do X, Y, or Z? Or,
I mean, yeah, the band days are like a massive blur as well.
Yeah.
I used to drink a lot. I used to smoke a lot. I haven't really drunk much in the last 10 years, really. And I don't smoke anymore. So, there's a clarity of mind that comes now, which looks back at like a lot of hazy moments with fondness, but no real sharp memories. I mean, there's definitely stuff I look back on, like earlier in our career, that are still the most poignant, you know, moments of our career, such as, you know, Reading Festival, when we played that Blue Tent. I can't remember what year it was. It was quite early on, maybe 2005 or 6. And I will never forget, because everyone out in that crowd wanted to fucking lynch us. We were basically, you know, the scrotum of Busted, you know? And we said to each other, you know, no matter what happens, we're not doing a Daphne and fucking Celeste. We're not walking off the stage. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're bleeding. It doesn't matter if someone's broken your fucking arm. You do not leave the stage. And the fucker behind the sound desk, whoever it was, decided to play Kaiser Chiefs' I Predict a Riot. The last song on the PA before we walked on. And everyone was like, fuck you, let's fucking have it. Fuck you. They were juiced. They were fucking juiced. And I remember I was walking on, and just with the intro and I was walking on, it was like something out of 300, mate. Like, you know, the spears coming over.
Yeah.
And it was like, fucking, what the fuck? Like, getting on the kit and just looking at each other like, what the fuck, fucking have it. And I will never forget, like, I got covered in everything that can come out of a human body.
Wow.
I got pelted with rotten fish. I got a pint of piss over me, came over in a glass. Wow. Not a glass, one of those plastic pint glasses.
Yeah.
Good aim. Whoever that was, good fucking aim. There was even, and this was really disturbing actually, there was even someone had gotten a disposable camera, hollowed it out, re-glued it, and filled it with cement.
What?
Ooh.
Yeah, and they lobbed it, and it
bounced off. That's attempted murder.
Yeah. It bounced off the stage and it went through the fucking 4x12 guitar cab, through one of the speakers and everything.
Jesus.
We literally, there was a hole in the mesh and then there was a hole in the speaker. And then when our guitar techs went in there, they pulled out this camera that weighed like a fucking brick. And we were but we stayed the course and we turned that fucking crowd around. And that was the beginning of us believing that we could actually take it to where we thought we could take it, and that we weren't going to be constantly under this sort of shadow of Charlie's previous career. And so I think for most of us in the band, is probably our most special moment in the band in its entirety. Yeah.
I've never heard that before. That's fucking meant, like, I knew you got some shit. But yeah,
literally,
that's fucking,
literally,
yeah, well, yeah. Literally, yeah, literally,
shit,
got
piss, cum, everything. I told you everything.
Yeah, leave it out, Charlie. You don't need to come over here.
I know the riff's good, mate, but chill out.
But like, who's? I don't understand who's bringing cement.
Who's manufacturing
cameras,
weapons of mad destruction?
And also, how are you sneaking raw fish into Reading Festival?
Like, I don't know how they did that. That was horrible, though, because we were actually, after Reading, we had to go and record something. I can't remember what it is we were recording. And we were at Battery Studios in Willesden. And I remember the kit hadn't been cleaned for like afterwards. So I was like opening the thing, like having to take everything apart on the kick drum, scrubbing all this fish out. Like it was horrible. It was fucking rank, absolutely rank. But fair play to those people who put the effort in. They were probably there at Wembley singing along now. So it's all
probably, yeah. Probably.
That's fucking, yeah, mad. A fish, like, thing is, if you're taking a fish into, if you despise a band so much, you take a fish into a, you're going to stink a fish all day.
I know.
That is the dedication. Yeah.
Fucking wow. Dedication, right? I mean, that's some serious Tupperware. You know, yeah. It's like a space in the not even in the cooler, just as sweaty in the bag as possible.
Oh,
yeah. You know, like fucking dedication's what it takes, mate. It's what you need.
Yeah, yeah. As Roy Castle used to say.
Yes, it is Roy Castle. I'm glad you got that one. Showing our age there.
Yeah. Oh, very much. Very much. Very much.
But, oh,
yeah.
God.
What's some other than that, because that's a pretty wild gig. Where's the weirdest place the fights that have played?
Oh, that's easy. Boise, Idaho in America, right?
Nice. Good
stuff. We were supporting Medina Lake.
Nice. Nice.
Bless the boys. Like, we took them out on the road here, and then we went out there to go on the road with them. And, you know, let's just say some of that tour wasn't very well booked, okay? So we get to this place in Boise, Idaho, and it's a big sort of theater. And the promoter just comes up to whoever's tour managing Medina Lake and is just like, we haven't sold any tickets. And they're like, what do you mean any tickets? They're like, we've sold no tickets. So we've moved the gig from here to the upstairs bar, right? Now... we went and set up because they were going to set up afterwards. That's how small the stage was. There was no, it was like a corner of a bar with like a 1 foot leg up, you know, by the windows. So I'm set up in the corner and we literally played. And I said to the guy, they were like, why are we even doing this? Why are we even playing? I was like, no, we play, if there's one person or 1,000 people, we play a show that we're proud of, right? So I will never forget this because we're like, maybe a few people walk in. We walked out. There was 2 people in there. Oh. Not even Medina Lake didn't even come to watch us. they were hiding somewhere being like, why the fuck has this happened? Right. And I will never forget. There was basically a guy eating dinner on the table and another guy eating nachos at the bar. And there was basketball on the TV. So I remember I played the whole show basically on muscle memory watching the basketball.
Oh, that's a good one.
It was so strange. And I think bless Medina Lake, they were really embarrassed at like not being able to sell it at all. But for us, it's like something that we will remember till the day we die, you know. Absolutely. Yeah, that's funny.
Wow. That's insane. That's insane to think, because the two of you now, Medina Lake and Fightstar in the UK, people would kill for that together.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Boise, Idaho just wasn't a market though.
No. No.
It was not a market.
Doesn't sound like it.
I mean, to be fair, it was like the universe said to me later on that night, I'm sorry, here's a present, because I ended up having a fantastic night with 2 strippers. So
there you go. Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much.
And as a 25-year-old me, I mean, I was like, could be worse. Could be worse.
You played with more people than you played to.
I know.
Mental.
Oh, that's a funny one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we won't go into that.
No, we won't.
Yeah, no. We leave it there. That was, yeah, good. Yeah, congratulations.
Before we move on from this, like you mentioned, they're living in kind of the Busted and Charlie's shadow a little bit in the early days, especially after the whole commercial success of Busted's first few records. Like, Charlie's been on this so many times and he's talked about like people not taking him seriously and especially the metal community not really embracing the band from day one. But like, I've always wondered what it was like for the other three of you dealing with that in a weird way, because, you know, you couldn't really escape it. I don't think it took you long to kind of get out of that. But the really early days must have been hard, especially when you were doing like signings and people are coming there with busted posters and, you know, doing radio interviews and people wanting to just talk to him about stuff. Like, how was it to get over that and that process?
It, to be honest, we were always really supportive of Charlie and Busted. That was the thing. It's like, if you go right back to before, you know, he ended up, you know, causing the breakup. The truth is when he even, I still remember the day we were recording, They Liked You Better When You Were Dead at Criterion Studios, which used to be a studio down in Archway, right? The little back alley studio. Mark Williams used to own that. And I'll never forget, like, he was always trying to keep Busted as far away as possible. He didn't really want to talk about it, just wanted to really focus on what we were doing when we were doing it. And I remember one night, he's like looking at his watch and we're like, what's going on, dude? You need to be somewhere. He's like, no, it's cool. Let's get this other take done. I want to do this take again. I'll do that. And he's like looking at his watch. He's like, And we're like, dude, what's going on? Like, you look like you're halfway here and halfway there. What's going on? And he's like, oh, I've got to be on stage at Wembley in about an hour and a half, but I just want to get this done. And we're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, go, what the fuck? Don't fuck around with that. Like, and, you know, and it was maybe a day or two after that he sort of sat us down and was like, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And all three of us were like, don't do that. Like, do not do what you're thinking about doing. Like, you're being stupid. Number one, you're going to make loads of money doing with that. Just compartmentalize it in your head. Just treat it like a job. And he's like, no, I can't. I just can't do it anymore. It's not me. Like, it never was me. But I suppose it is a part of me. And blah, blah, blah. And you have to understand, for Charlie, he was 15 years old when he got snapped up, you know, to be a part of that. What 15-year-old, including the three of us, would not jump at being in a band, you know, when that you're going to get paid suddenly. You don't have to finish school. You're like, fuck yeah, I'm off, mate. See you later, Mr. Bartridge. Like, fuck your English class. You know, like,
I can't believe this band. What? You can get paid for being in a band? What?
That's the thing. Exactly.
What the?
So from our perspective, the three of us, we were always like super like supportive of him doing it. And when he called it a day, we were like, fuck. Because now there was that moment, you know, our name was on ITV News that day. Charlie Simpson has left Busted for his side project, Fight Star. Da, da, da. And we're like, oh no, like this is bringing maybe even more attention than we wanted. Like, we just wanted to be a band and do it the way bands do it, go and play some small shows. So then what happened after that was, and this is all credit to Craig Jennings, who was our manager back then, and us for saying it, but everyone and their fucking granny on TV, radio, whatever, wanted to suddenly have us, like, on TV shows, on radio shows, and we just put a blanket, no, we're not doing any of that. We're going to be playing the Dublin Castle at this point. And that's it. And then after that, if that does all right, we'll play another gig, which ended up being, I think, The Underworld and blah, blah, blah. And we were already getting promoters saying, oh, no, we can, you know, we can put you in 1,000 caps straight away. And we're like, fuck off. Yeah. Like, that's not what we're trying to do here. We're just a band trying to, like, find our way. Like, and, you know, I still remember the first tour we went on and we were playing, I think it was the first show, Warwick Uni, and it was probably one of the biggest shows we did to that date. And we actually had this discussion the other week. I think Dan thinks it might have been sabotage, but till now we've always just thought it was, you know, just a mechanical fault. But the first chord of the show, the fucking Messer triple wreck blew up on the first chord.
Oh.
And we were like, da-da-da. And then me and Dan basically held the crowd for like 5 minutes while they changed heads with the A-team. This is what he reminded me the other day. We played the A-team, me and Dan. You know, and it was just like, we just felt the weight of that. I remember that uni, they had like a big balcony that wraps around. So people are like looking down on you when they're watching you, as well as the crowd on the floor. And I'll never forget it. I've just felt like, oh my God, it's all going wrong. As soon as we've taken it from like smaller gigs, it's all going wrong. And actually that gig turned out to be really good after we got, you know, the amp going again and stuff like that. But yeah, so, you know, to go back to your question of how we felt about it, there was always this support for Charlie that, like we want him to do as well as he can. As Charlie, as well as us do, as well as we can as Fightstar. So we never really wanted to hold him back from, you know, even much later on where he, you know, rejoined Busted and, you know, that happened almost at the same time as Behind the Devil's Back and all of that. Mm. We were super supportive. We were like, yeah, go do it. And he was like, yeah, like his mental attitude of what it meant to him had very much changed. It's a big part of his life. You know, a bit like Patrick Stewart and Star Trek, you know, he came away from it hating it. And then years later, he absolutely adores the fact that he does it. And he embraces the fans now and is like really proud of all the work he did on that series. So I think Charlie, for him, it's really turned a corner in the last sort of 10 years when it comes to Busted, because he is proud of it now. Hmm. He does see himself in it. And we're super glad that he has that still, you know, and that he didn't turn away from it forever, because yeah, well, it's an amazing achievement what they've done.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, for sure. We've told him when we first had him on. We told him, like, you got to realize how many kids who were into rock later on were, but you know, Busted fans originally.
Like, yeah,
it's he, yeah.
It opened the doors for so many people's ears to, whether it's just pop punk and getting into like Rancid and all the people over in America, or whether it was like the gateway drug and, you know, they ended up into fucking Meshuggah and, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. People my age, I mean, Busted are the first band they got into, and then Fightstar are the first metal or heavy band they've heard with screams.
Yeah.
The amount of that.
It's crazy. Like, yeah. That little lineage. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice that we can live in a world now where all of you are kind of coexisting in a way, and yeah, these gigs can happen wherever.
It's all accepted, and it's all like, you know, at the time there's all this sort of like, wow, they're not a rock band, they're a pop band, and this rivalry thing. And then, but what we know from rock crowds, right, what we know is rock crowds are made up of the best fucking music people there are, right? And we see it in the physical crowds, and we feel it from the people we end up talking to after shows and whatnot. And even from my friends who were at Wembley, some of them not rock people at all. And one of them, actually, the other day, my friend Ellen, she basically said to me, she was like, I was so amazed when we were walking from the car park to the gig, like all the people we were like bumping into and saying hi to, and the camaraderie and how nice everyone was. It was like an arena full of super cool humans, you know? and that's, I think, what that kind of level of kind of adversity many years back does to people. It shows people that everyone is the same, man. Like, we're all here to like do good for ourselves, do good for our friends and family, live happy and healthy lives, and be happy in general, right? And that's what I think our fan base is about. It's about good people coming together and celebrating.
And that they did.
And one of those other threads that came to see you was one Mr. Edward Sheeran.
Oh, man. Now, that was funny. So, oh, bless him. Such a sweet guy, man. Such a lovely guy. We didn't spend much time with him, but I basically was in my dressing room, like doing the Zen, you know, meditation thing. I kind of got on pretty much to the end of the set, and I got a knock on the door, and it's Charlie.
No, Sheeran!
Yeah. Like, the worst. Get out of here, Sheeran. I'm meditating. No, it's Charlie at the door. And I was like, oh, what's up? And he's like, oh, Ed's here. He wants a picture. And I thought he was talking about Ed, his drummer from Busted, who was helping us with the backing tracks and stuff like that, the playback system during rehearsals and stuff. So I was like, oh, Ed's here. Wicked. I'll come and say hello to Ed. So I walk Tootle down and I come in and it's just like Ed Sheeran. And I'm like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, like obviously he's met the other three are all there. So I've walked in late and he's like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. Like, and it was so weird because it was like a bright eyed, you know, like fan. And he's like, it's weird because I feel like I've known you. I've watched so many videos that you're all in. And I'm just like,
awesome.
Oh, me too, dude. Yeah.
Do you know what? I know a couple of your ditties as well.
Yeah, exactly. But he was so sweet. We had a little chat and a little banter. And then actually he was like, because the original thing was that him and Charlie, they speak sometimes. They've known each other for a while. He's from Suffolk. And he's always, you know, he's always harked back to this one specific gig at Norwich that he came to see us, right? And so he actually said to Charlie, like, I know you're playing Wembley, like, I'm going to come and I'd like to play a song with you. And we were like, fucking hell, like, that's amazing. Like, of course he's welcome to, that'd be great. But he requested a certain song to play because it's like his favorite. And it was Grand Unification Part 2, which isn't something we've ever played because it's very much an album track that's almost a segue track. There's a lot of ethereal stuff and then one fucking heavy breakdown and then back to ethereal and like a speech about like the cosmos, right? So we're like, fuck, so I've learned it obviously and it's not a hard track. I'm only on it for like 2 minutes of the 5 minutes. The rest of it is me sort of having a cup of tea. And so I did learn it and we made sure we knew it, but then we got a message saying, look, Ed's coming, but he can't play. So we were like, cool, great. Actually, it's no problem, but we're definitely not going to play the track because we're only going to play it if he wanted to play it. So in the dressing room, he turns around to me and he's like, so you're playing Grand Unification Part 2? And the rest of the guys were like, oh, fuck. And I was just like, no, mate, you said you didn't want to, you couldn't come and play it. So we're not going to play it. And he's like, what? No. Oh, man. And then he grabbed both mine and Charlie's hands and he just started singing the chorus bit. It was like, hold my hand until the waves come. And we were like, me and Charlie were like, cool, sweet. It was really sweet. He was such a nice guy, and he came and did some pictures with all the families and kids and stuff. Yeah. We got a little picture together.
Oh, that's lovely.
And he watched the show from a couple of different vantage points. But he said, "Look, I'm not going to make it to the after show party. It's always a bit of a madness for me. Blah blah blah." And I can imagine it was so. But it was so lovely to have him there and to meet him finally, you know, one of our oldest Fight Star fans.
Do you know what? Is that how the elite work when it comes to going to see bands they like and wanting songs they like on the set is by going, oh, I'll do it with you. And then they have to learn it and they're going to play. And most of them will just put it in the set, whatever. Like if... Most bands would have just gone, oh, well, we've learned it now. We'll play it, you know, we'll go through with it. Oh, clever, Ed. I wonder,
that might have been his plan all the time, mate. Who knows?
Oh, I know, yeah. Like, does Eminem, like, phone somebody up and be like, oh, I'll do that song with you? And he just turns up and he's like, yes, they're playing this. And I'm just watching.
No, but yeah, it was really nice to have him there. And yeah, I'd you know, one day maybe we can play a track together, you know, that'd be great.
Yes.
It'd be really sweet.
Yeah. I'd love to hear Ed Sheeran scream.
Me too. But I also don't want the repercussions if he blows his voice out.
Oh, and that's true.
We end up getting lawyers on our ass going, it's your fault. It's your fault. You owe us about £1 million for the next four shows.
Nah, yeah, no.
He's wild. What a lovely chap. Yeah.
Genuinely a lovely, lovely guy. Very genuine, very, just real, just a real guy.
He seems it, yeah.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Good. Well, that's good to you, yeah.
as we start to wind down on this conversation a little bit, a couple of other things I would like to bring up is obviously, you know, at the beginning, Sean joked around with you being a guy that's done a lot of different stuff in between the fight star and breaks. But was there any talks or was there any chance of you playing drums for a different band or a session musician or something like that? Is that never kind of crossed your mind?
So in the early days after Fightstar sort of took our first hiatus, there were a couple of options. I was in the running. I just didn't take them. Bill Bailey wanted me to come and play what? For him and his band. So, but unfortunately, I was late 20s, going towards 30. I was still partying quite hard. My priorities weren't that straight. And, I ended up bucking it off to go to some mad festival in Spain in the desert for like a week. I kind of lost a few of the opportunities and then became sort of not relevant anymore. So there was that moment, and I did do a couple of bits of session work, more like ghost work, like playing on things that were sort of recorded by one person that couldn't really do the job properly. And then they got me in at midnight and I covered sort of their mistakes. We won't go into what those were, but
Metallica. It was Metallica.
that snare drum.
That's all you, baby.
The thing is with me, session music never really connected, because I'm very much someone who has to be involved in the writing. Like, it's very dynamic playing. It's part of the structure of the song. So when it comes to like oldies, like playing old funk records and stuff like that, great. I that's kind of where I come from. But I did a couple of bits with a couple of artists at session, just playing their tracks. But I never felt the love for it. And it wasn't something that I kind of took to in a great way. And also the thing of like being in a new band, it would have taken the very, very right circumstances for me to have entertained that, because as you know, Sean, being in a band is quite draining, quite physically, emotionally draining. It's like being in a relationship with a bunch of dudes. It's like, it's hard work. And I always said to myself that really, unless things align, I wouldn't really take that on again. I think after this show, though, I've been reminded about how much I really love being on stage and how much I really love playing. So I'm kind of more open to getting back behind the kit for various people now. But whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see the way the cookie crumbles, man.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I mean, you were smiling so much at that gig. I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, thanks, man.
It's infectious.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to just...
Thanks for having me, man. It's an absolute
no
pleasure.
Worries.
No, our pleasure. Yeah, our pleasure. Yeah. Generally, we know so many people who were so happy and so hyped with that Wembley show and just itching for more. So fingers crossed something comes up at some point.
Great. You guys will be the first to know. I guarantee you that.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers, man. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you, guys. Take care. Peace out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsaitis. Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You listen to Sappy Podcast!
Yeah! Yes, that was the fantastic Omar Abidi of Fightstar and TV and adverts and sound engineering and tour managing. He tour managed fucking Tayo Cruz. Do you remember Tayo Cruz?
Oh, yeah. Oh, whoa, we should talk about this.
Oh, if only we had a podcast where we... Ah, shit! We've just done one! Yeah, this is what I said. This is why I want to do like a part two. Like,
yeah, there's so much to talk about then.
Yeah, I found out like all the other jobs he's done post that, and that's super interesting. So yeah, we'll have to get him on at another point to talk about all those other things he's done. But yeah, what a great, engaging, lovely, beautiful human. I'm not sure if he's done stand-up comedy, but he's a very funny fella.
Very, very funny. Naturally storyteller as well. Just a great guy overall, I'd say.
Top chap. That's our review. 5Ks. Review. 5Ks. Top chap. We should start reviewing people. Let's start reviewing people on Sapling Podcast.
And so it'd be 5 S's, wouldn't it, I guess?
Oh, yeah. For Sapling. Like, yeah, I was going to say it. And what? For Sean's, like, I give him 5 Seans. He is worth 5 Seans. Nice.
Oh, God. But no, I really appreciate him coming on. We've had so many requests since Fightstar even announced that Wembley show to do something with the guys. Trust me, we have tried, but because of scheduling and all that, it's being a nightmare. But I'm glad we could finally get this done and just really reflect on such a wonderful night and just a band that means so much to us and I know a lot of people listening. One of the things I thought of straight away after we had that conversation, though, was if Ed Sheeran went to a random Fightstar gig, does that mean he must have seen the blackout somehow?
I don't know.
Is Ed Sheeran know who you are?
It's mad, isn't it? Isn't it mad? Does Ed Sheeran know who I am? You've got to hope not, for his sake. Like, but you never know. You know. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, if he'd seen all these bands, like, he likes a bit of rock.
Hmm.
It's mad, isn't it?
I did have a quick look at, like, a website where there was all the Fightstar's gigs, like, they've ever played. I was trying to work out if you supported them in Norwich just for the off chance.
Yeah.
Couldn't find anything, but I did see that, and you're the best person to ask this, if this was correct. Yeah. Apparently, you once played a Kerrang album gig at the Underworld or the Forum or something, and it was Fightstar, Enter Shikari, The Blackout, and Kids in Glass Houses.
Did it say, like, hosted by Ginger Wildart?
No, it just says that those 4 bands played, and I was like, fucking hell.
I don't know. I remember playing the Underworld once and Ginger Wildart was hosting it and he was fucking absolutely steaming out of his mind. And so we went on, he introduced us before we went on. Then he went on after us and he said, because Enter Shikari redlining, and he said, give it up for the next band. What's their name? And he tried to make it out like he was trying to get a crowd to... Oh. But it was fuck. I remember that. Because I remember awkwardness. I don't. The gig you're talking about might have been a brilliant gig. Because apparently I forget brilliant gigs, and I just remember awkward buzzing moments where you're like, "Oh, don't do that! Please don't do that!" And Ginger Wildart was swapping his t-shirt between every band for a different like porn magazine cover t-shirt. It wasn't good time in the Ginger times, and I'm glad he's better now. So tidy. But no, I don't remember that gig.
Oh, it might be internet rumors then. I don't know. I saw it and I was like, can we have that in 2024 or 2025, please? Oh, that would be very nice.
Enter Shikari or Fightstar, you need to speak about that, innit?
Like, yeah, it's true, I guess. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Mad rambles, but yes. Hey, if you've heard of some random ass gigs or stories or things you just want us to talk about on this podcast, let us know at SamplingPod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter, and head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sampling to support us, to keep this thing going, to get extra content behind the scenes, and get involved with the best community of people you will ever bloody meet. We can guarantee you that.
Yes, yes, we can. 100% actually, because they are the fucking best. Despite a slight mutiny a couple of weeks ago where they tried to make it this a ska podcast. But here we are now. We're back. We're firing on all cylinders more than ever. And we're definitely not a ska. Scapning, like, we're not scapning.
No. Oh, no. I did.
Podscast. Podscast. Oh, anybody who's in a ska band and who's listening to this, number one, sorry. But also, if you want to start a podcast called Podscast, you are welcome to have it. So, Fiverr I want. Don't join our Patreon. Send me the Fiverr direct. Otherwise, it'll get split up between me and Morgan and PayPal and Patreon. So, I'll save out 4 pence for that Fiverr. But, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You had the description of this episode. There's loads of names there that we thank. Yes. But as always, Sean's going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapling Podcast Patreon top tiers.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi, Paul Hirschfield, Scarlett Charlton, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Tony Michael, Dilly Califragilistic, Expeller Grimwood, They Who Shall Not Be Named, Amy Louise, Molly Malloy and James Bowerbank, Kat Besant, Alexandra Pemberton, Nothing Minor Need a Bassist. Get in touch with Nothing Minor. They're a South Wales, Bridgen, Cardiffy based band, and they need a bassist. Get in touch with them, innit? Thank you very much, Jonathan Gutierrez, Jenny Robson, Amy Dawson, Murray Grimwood. Pick it up, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. That's remnants of the ska takeover they tried to do that we will never, as long as I'm alive, will never let them do. Thank you very much, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Caroline Robson, Stephen Aston, Kate Puttock, Jenny Munster, Carl Pendlebury, Louis Cook, James McNaught, John and Emma, Jason Aredia, Danny Eaton, Martina McManus, Sean Foynes, Thomas O'Neill, Evan, Dan Peregrine, Ollie Amesbury, Emily Perry, Khalila Keane, Adam King of the Goss Parslow, Sophie Ansell, Josh, 9 months isn't long, but some it can feel like a maternity. Crisp. Oh, my God. Thank you very much. Lavender Lee Martin, Vicky, Laura Russell, Fraser Cummins, Ra 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 James, the Kyle Smith. Have you seen that? That went viral this week?
No.
Oh, what? It's fucking class. Last but no means least, thank you very much to Connor Lewins and family. Back to my point. So there's a video gone viral this week, right? Some guy's parked up somewhere and some old woman comes out thinking she fucking owns the place, you know, like the elderly do, right?
Right, yeah.
She comes out and she goes, you've got to move your car from here. And he's like, well, why? And she's like, oh, it's my car park space. He's like, oh, it's a public car park. She's like, that's my space. Don't make me get my boyfriend out there. And he goes, go and get him. He's like, you don't even know who my boyfriend is. And so the guy goes, who is she? She goes, the Kyle Smith. And he's like, I never heard of him. And maybe, and they go on and she keeps going. And at the end he goes, who's your boyfriend again? And she's like, the Kyle Smith. Who? So I messaged her instantly. As soon as I saw that, I messaged Kyle Smith from our Patreon instantly. And I was like, the Kyle Smith. So that's the joke. That's the end of this podcast. Let's move on. I don't know if that's going to land as well as I think it would with our audience, but check it out anyway, innit? Just Google the Kyle Smith and just see what comes up. It's a funny video of an elderly woman losing her fucking mind. And I like that.
Yay. We all like a laugh, don't we? I guess that's why we fucking do that. I don't know. Anyway, don't know where to go from that. We're going to go. We're seeing Pierce the Veil in Cardiff tonight, so we'll have a laugh there. Have a look at our socials. Maybe we'll post some stuff. Who knows?
I hope I get to meet them.
Yeah, but they were on the... Oh, shout out to Pierce DeVille because they were on the podcast episode 212, I guess, ages ago. So we'll go back and listen to that. if you want more Fight Star episodes, we've done so many with fucking Charlie Simpson. You can go back
listen
to them. There's a drunk version of him in one.
Oh, yeah. Slam Dunk one. He's drunk. Hey, a lot of people are saying we've done too many episodes. Too many episodes with Charlie Simpson. That was the worst Donald Trump impression I've ever heard.
Awful.
But a lot of people are saying we should do more with Charlie Simpson, if anything.
Yeah, they are. And I agree with that. And just, have a laugh, innit? That's happening pod. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Friday with even more guests and chaos and
more
things
guests
for you to distract.
We got ten guests on next week's podcast.
No. Hey, that's
all talking
season.
The same time. All talking the same time. Fucking chaos. Oh, good luck everyone for next week's one. I can't believe we're interviewing Slipknot, all of Slipknot. That's mad, isn't it? All the same time. Bonkers. Anyway,
what's happening?
Fuck knows what happened to my voice then.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.